KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
For joining us every weekday afternoon, 1 o'clock. And come on, listen, I want to tell you about tomorrow's show because it is packed full. On Monday, we intended to have New Mexico Men of Honor on the broadcast. That's going to happen, God willing, tomorrow. We'll have them in studio to talk about their next event coming up. We'll also have an author of a Bible study that is 50 years old now. The Bible study is. And we're going to welcome a wonderful lady onto the broadcast to talk about relationships, moms, daughters, and she'll share some of her story that hopefully will be an encouragement to those that have struggled in that area and wonder how, you know, about reconciliation. You're going to want to be tuned in for that. So New Mexico Men of Honor, we'll have that author on a timely interview for Mother's Day. And then, of course, our Heritage Foundation update, we plan to do that for you. And I know that Brian Cochran, the president at John Moore Associates, is going to take some time to bring us that Friday financial update. So a full show tomorrow. It's always a full show. But today, as a matter of fact, a full hour with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And Paul, as always, on this monthly update, we get thank you for your work, primarily your work and the work of the others at Rio Grande Foundation for keeping us informed.
Well, thanks for having me, and I'm happy to talk to you and share what we are doing at the Rio Grande Foundation to try to bring more freedom, more individual liberty to the land of enchantment.
Speaking of which, Paul, a few things I want to make sure people are aware of as far as availability of the content that is produced by you and your team, Rio Grande Foundation.org. You'll go to that website and find out about the foundation. On Errors of Enchantment, you'll find the blogs from primarily Paul, and he'll share some news articles, and on occasion you'll have other people writing the blogs, but for the most part, Paul's blogs, and many of those we cover right here every month. We kind of highlight some of those. And then a Tipping Point, with which you know, hopefully we'll be hearing more about here on KLYT. But Paul, you know, honestly, I don't bring it up that often when we visit the podcast that folks can catch on a regular basis. I see you had a chance. Just at a glance, just now saw you had a chance to catch up with Daniel Higby, a local businessman. Daniel does some great work.
Yeah, I was going to mention that one, and I don't talk about our Tipping Point that often on the show. You know, it's in a competitive realm.
Yeah, I don't. But, you know what? I don't see it that way, and I appreciate your sensitivity there. It's quality content that we can draw our listeners to.
Well, I appreciate that, and hopefully, like you said, we'll be able to share some of these episodes and some of that conversation on the station here, but. Daniel Higby, he is a local businessman, entrepreneur. As we mentioned, he recently sat down with me for a conversation. TippingPointsNM.com is where you can find that on your browser. Of course, if you're subscribed through one of the podcast software companies, you can find that recent conversation. He and I talk about some of the unique aspects of New Mexico history and culture that are a hindrance to a lot of the policies that we talk about: entrepreneurship, limited government, individual freedom, how some historical factors have played into that, how he is working, including right here at Calvary with a entrepreneurship, a faith-based entrepreneurship group.
Yeah, which, by the way, whether you attend Calvary or not, all those faith-driven entrepreneurs are welcome, whether they attend Calvary or not. It's a class that he does from time to time. But I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's great. And he, you know, we talk about that and some of the things that, you know, would move New Mexico in a more positive direction. And I'll give you this. He does not see this as a overnight kind of thing in terms of how it's going to have to happen in New Mexico. It's going to be a long-term proposition, and it's really ultimately a combination of informing people, educating people, as we do at the Rio Grande Foundation, but philosophical approaches that entrepreneurs and business owners are going to have to embrace, and others who are involved in kind of the culture of New Mexico to try to move the state into one that's more trusting of outsiders and free markets and money and those kinds of things, in a sense that all of those have to come together. And then the businessmen and businesswomen engage in policies and entrepreneurial activities that redound to the benefit of New Mexicans and New Mexico. So it's a fascinating conversation. It's about 40, 45 minutes. Check it out at tippingpointsnm.com. And I'll just say that the one thing we start with is Hampton Sides book, Blood and Thunder, which I talk to anybody who I am talking, you know, base level New Mexico policy history. It is a fantastic read just to enjoy it, but it is a fantastic book when it comes to New Mexico history and understanding in more detail why New Mexico is the way it is.
All right.
It's all about Kit Carson and the American Southwest.
It's a rich, very rich history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something that I can't believe they haven't made a movie about it yet.
Huh.
Or two. It might be a couple of movies.
Yeah.
Because this, I mean, Kit Carson, he's controversial, and that may be part of the problem is that he's such a controversial guy. But it's not really praising or denigrating Carson. It's more the world as it stood and as he interacted with it.
Right.
Blood and Thunder, worth the read.
All right. And let me just reiterate the different places you can find that content from the Rio Grande Foundation. RioGrandeFoundation.org, errorsofenchantment.com, tippingpointnm.com, which you can find where you find your favorite podcast, most likely. And Paul, the reason I did want to kind of, you know, it's a little bit extended on the focusing this first segment on the Rio Grande Foundation, not only all of that, but Paul, you make yourself available to go and speak to groups. Case in point, you spent a little time in Las Cruces recently.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the ideal is if you have a group in Albuquerque, Rio Rancho, Belen, East Mountains and environs
home.
I am happy to be at your beck and call, relatively speaking. Give us a call, 505-264-6090, and we can definitely work something out. But last week I was in the city of Las Cruces, a little over 3 hours south of Albuquerque here. Talk to two different groups. One is the Concerned Citizens in Action. It's a very localized grassroots organization. I gave them more than an hour. I don't always need that much time. I speak to Rotaries when they have 25 minutes. It's just I fit my speaking to the time available, but they have a longer meeting and was able to really go into some detail about what happened in the legislative session, what didn't happen, what came close to happening, good and bad. And then I talk about taxes in a separate presentation to the Americans for Prosperity group down there. And, you know, Las Cruces is an interesting town. I think based on my visits there that I've seen and talking to people, a lot of folks are moving there to retire, who may not want to be in the Phoenix Metro, Scottsdale, might be too expensive. They might not like the traffic. They might want a slower pace. You know, Las Cruces has more available space to construct housing than we do, quite frankly, here in Albuquerque. You really don't have much economically speaking, which is not good for you and I and for most younger people, but it's better for retirees who, you know, they just want a nice place to live. Many of them like the blue skies and the warmer weather. It's definitely a little warmer down there in Las Cruces than it is up here. And it's a community that I think is going to thrive with the aging of the population. Of course, we talk about state policies. We talk about local policies, and that's an issue in Las Cruces. They've gone very progressive in recent years at the local level, and I've got something that I'm going to talk about in just a second relating to that. But, you know, eliminating the Social Security tax in our state would be helpful for a variety of reasons, including making Las Cruces a boon for retirees.
Yeah, and you mentioned all those. I mean, Tucson, maybe even Albuquerque, people making the move. And although you alluded to the fact that they're you know starting to lean more progressive, even at this point, there's some things they do down there that the leadership in Albuquerque could probably learn from some of the things we've talked about over the last several months. And actually staying on the topic of Las Cruces brings us to a blog that you posted at errorsofenchantment.com on Las Cruces moving to eliminate natural gas.
Yeah, and we've talked about this from a national level when there was federal regulations proposed to get rid of gas stoves and gas hot water heaters, other gas appliances around the house. Other cities across the country have done this. Fortunately, not New Mexico cities to date, but that can always change. And Las Cruces could be on the verge of attacking those natural gas appliances.
Isn't New Mexico one of the largest providers of natural gas, Paul?
It is. We are a big natural gas state. And that's one of the things that makes New Mexico unique. There are many, many things.
Florida's going to start New Mexico unique. Boycotting oranges.
Yeah, exactly. New Mexico is one of the few major producers of oil and natural gas that remains politically to the left. And that normally you may not have much concern about that, but as the Democratic Party, as politicians on the left side of the political spectrum have moved towards a more and more radical standpoint on energy and the environment, they have also moved against natural gas. Now, natural gas is clean relative to other sources of energy, less than half the CO2 of coal. It's a very good, reliable, affordable source of energy.
So what's their beef?
They don't like any fossil fuels. I mean, let's just be real. The radical environmental groups do not like any fossil fuels at all. And, you know, we could do a whole radio show on this, I promise you. But I'll take New Mexico and our current governor. I'll get into Las Cruces in just a second. You know, in 2019, New Mexico became part, moved down the path of the Energy Transition Act. That is where, in the not too distant future, we're theoretically going to be 100% renewable electricity in the state of New Mexico. Batteries are going to be a big part of that. Lithium batteries and the like. Those are very expensive. They're of dubious environmental kind of their cleanliness because you're of course mining significant lands and all the damage that comes with that. But if I had been Michelle Lujan Grisham, our governor's best ally on that, I would have said, shut down the coal-fired power plant, shut down San Juan Generating Station in the Four Corners. But you know what? We've got this source of energy, the source of potentially electricity, natural gas from the San Juan Basin, the Four Corners of our state, and that could be the source of natural gas, power across that part of the state. And you can use the same power lines that you just had for the power plants and shift them to natural gas plants, which have the benefit, certain kinds, of being very workable with a renewable portfolio as well. Because, the thing with coal, picture an old-time coal train. You've got to shovel the coal in, you got to get that coal, get on fire, and you got to move the train forward, you got to keep that going. But it takes a lot of time. And a coal power plant is a lot like a coal train.
But where it's not, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, is all that big black smoke that's coming out of that old steam engine.
True.
They've dealt with that.
They clean it up quite dramatically, and there are ways to make coal cleaner. And I'm not here to talk about coal as an energy source. It's kind of a moot point in New Mexico because of the governor's policies. But they got rid of the San Juan generating station.
Yeah.
They should have replaced it with natural gas. That you can turn on and off a natural gas plant very easily.
And maybe the answer is obvious, but what's the advantage to that as opposed to nuclear?
I think the easiest way to frame that is that nuclear is just politically radioactive, so to speak.
Okay.
Radioactive in more ways than one. It's just nuclear is a difficult thing to get done in a lot of states, and that's one of the hypocrisies of the radical environmental movement is that they won't support nuclear. They want to support wind turbines and solar panels and batteries, which all have their negative environmental impacts. Nuclear has been one of the safest and is obviously the cleanest form of energy you can find, and it's very steady and works very well. But that's not the way the environmental groups want to go. And we're not going to have nuclear unless small modular reactors come online in the near future. It's going to be a long time. So anyway, getting back to Las Cruces, there's a memo from the city that was sent out in March. And it talks about the climate action plan that the city has previously adopted, and that they are going to be holding a public meeting on Tuesday, May 20th, 6 to 8 p.m. at their city hall. I'm assuming that not many people listening to this are from Las Cruces, but this is the kind of thing that will filter to other cities.
We are on at 88.1 FM in Las Cruces,
okay.
So I do do hope we're getting some of that
audience.
Well, I hope
so, yes. So to reiterate, Tuesday, May 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Las Cruces City Hall. And folks down there can find out more, lascruces.gov/naturalgas to learn more. But it's not stated in this memo, but the memo is clearly moving the city and moving this conversation down there in a direction of how are we going to limit or eliminate the natural gas from our homes and from our heating and other sources of power. And it says right there, we're looking at different ways to bring energy to homes and businesses. Our goal is to find solutions that keep energy reliable and affordable while meeting goals set by the City of Las Cruces Climate Action Plan. Well, I've got news for them. There's no way to keep energy reliable and affordable that also achieves the goals of their climate action plan. It is impossible. Natural gas is the best means of doing that, and it's relatively clean, as I've said before. So it is a problem. I think that Las Cruces is going to be dealing with, and hopefully they step back and are realistic in their approach.
All right. You want to find out more and read that more in depth, go to errorsofenchantment.com. On that story. We're spending a full hour with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and we're going to come back with more after the break on ABQ Connect. Hi, we're in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing for the full hour today for the Rio Grande Foundation, and riograndefoundation.org is the website. Much of what you're hearing is taken from the blogs Paul has posted at errorsofenchantment.com. And as we mentioned at the top of the hour, you can hear his podcast, Tipping Point New Mexico, at tippingpointnm.com and wherever you get your favorite location to download your favorite podcast and listen to, you'll find it there. Paul, the next blog we wanted to look at was one you wrote. The headline is RGF weighs in on governor's contingency fund for KOAT-7 story. What's that about?
Yeah, this was a story that I was asked to discuss with the folks at Channel 7. This is kind of an evergreen story in New Mexico, quite frankly, because governors of both parties have used taxpayer dollars for some, questionable purchases. And the legislature has theoretically attempted to address the issue by passing laws, but they have really not done what needs to be done. So I ultimately blame the legislature for maybe 80% of the problem, 20% being the governor. So basically...
And not just our current governor.
Right. Basically, the governor's office comes with certain responsibilities and perks. And when you are doing official business as the governor, there are things like food and drinks that you have at the governor's mansion for people that you want to, have.
Hospitality.
There. Yeah, exactly. So the legislature, where they fall down is that they need to clearly itemize, something like you would do in an expense report. Say, what is the expense? Where was the expense? What's the receipt? But also, who or what group of people did you meet with? How many of them were there? And what was the reasoning for the event? That kind of thing takes 5 minutes. That is not done in the governor's expense report, and it's not done because the legislature has not required it.
So, I mean, is it a monthly, a yearly, and is it just kind of like, because I spent it?
Yeah, because, it's on a budgetary process, so every year. Yeah,
but I mean, there's very little accountability, like you're talking about. I mean, every month I need to fill out an expense report.
Right, so I think it's on a monthly basis, but there is no overall budget, so the governor could spend as much as she wants in terms of this contingency fund, because that's not been a line item in the budget in recent years. And there a few other things that caught my attention. One is that this particular governor has used the contingency fund presumably for some kind of event on days when her official calendar indicates that she is actually taking the day off, which I think is a little questionable and suspicious. So that's something that we would like to see more analysis of.
And is that unique to our current governor?
Now, I don't have information all the way back to the previous governor, because this law was passed during the term of the previous governor, Susana Martinez. And, there were some issues during that administration with contingency funds.
Regardless, so, it's clearly an issue.
Yeah. And the other thing that I find kind of humorous about this whole situation is that, and to her credit, the governor's never came out really and taken a position on plastic bag bans. She's definitely kind of positioned herself on a lot of other policies as a pretty radical environmental advocate. Well, there are a bunch of line items in there for the 10-cent non-reusable bags up in Santa Fe that the governor has been using. So while she may want us to all shift from coal to natural gas or to renewables, she is not willing to...
For thee, not for me.
Bring, a plastic bag. I mean, it's kind of like Bernie Sanders, reports have been flying around the internet and social media, and it's totally legitimate that he has been doing these events with AOC and other politicians in a private plane. And, the plastic bags are a lot smaller of an issue. And quite frankly, I think they are a great useful tool because, first and foremost, I have pets and little trash cans that I need to use my plastic bags for. But, it would be nice if the governor showed a little bit of leadership and said, staffer or whoever is doing this purchasing might use a canvas reusable bag, because that's what she's supposed to advocate for.
All right. Is that something we can reach out to our legislator and say, hey,
you
need to amp up the accountability.
Tighten up the contingency fund, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Before we go to a break, at least one more item to talk about. Paul, you had sent me a note about you being in attendance at an Albuquerque City Council that recently considered and rejected a gross receipts tax hike.
Yeah, Monday night at City Council here in Albuquerque, there was a 3/8 cent GRT increase that would have been potentially put on ballots this fall. City Council actually on a unanimous vote, shockingly, 9-0 rejected it. And there was a lot of political infighting and argumentation along various sides, not necessarily just the proponents and opponents, but how it was to be used and various things. So ultimately, they threw up their hands and everybody voted against it. We're glad that they did not choose to put that on the ballot. That would have taken us to an 8% GRT rate here in the city of Albuquerque. What I can say is that one of the leading advocates, the groups that advocated for that tax increase, is a group that wants to see a new events center downtown. They think Pope Joy Hall and that whole array of event centers and, of course, Kiva Auditorium and Kimo Auditorium are inadequate to the cause for the local theater and philharmonic groups. And so that's why they want to see the tax increased, because that's something that would be a part of why it was used. And needless to say, since the budget of Albuquerque has nearly doubled under Mayor Keller, the latest budget he just proposed, $1.5 billion, up from $750 million-ish. That's a huge increase. And we believe that, you know, they could prioritize things a little differently at City Council, City Hall, if there was something specific that they wanted. But
okay,
they,
now this is kind of coming off a recent trip last Sunday to Santa Fe. More box theaters. Small venue. It's intimate. And tickets might even be less.
Yeah, we have some of those here in town.
No, we do. We have, absolutely. And I've been to those too. That's not really an argument. And actually, as you were going through that, I'm like, I can think of all kinds of other places that are available with hundreds of seats here in town, depending on the production that would probably fit. And, you know, how often are we filling, and I know it's Rio Rancho, but how often are we filling seats for events, filling, sold out at the event center in Rio Rancho or Tingley? And I understand the age of Tingley. Listen, you're sitting somewhere watching, with a good production team, there's great shows in these venues that we already have, my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Okay. Hey, we're up against the break. Let's do that. We're going to come back and spend a couple more segments with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org. Heirsofenchantment.com is where many of these blog postings that we're covering today you will find. And then conversations Paul has with typically local leaders and what have you, Paul, on Tipping Point.
Yeah, predominantly local or state leaders, and oftentimes we have some conservative leaders from across the country that have a specific issue or point that they
are talking about. That would be relative to what we're doing here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, so tippingpointnm.com, or look for it wherever you look for your favorite podcasts. We're going to come back with more with Paul Gessing right after this on ABQ Connect. All right, thanks for tuning in. ABQ Connect daily at 1 o'clock. And the full hour today with Paul Gessing. If you missed the first half of the show, you'll find it archived at abqconnect.online. And let's press on, Paul. And actually, much of the content we've been getting is right at your website, where you have the blogs on errorsofenchantment.com. The next one, however, an article you were sharing this afternoon, written by Justin Garcia, at the Journal on Albuquerque using $23 million for Housing Forward Fund. For those not familiar, enlighten us.
Well, the $23 million is what the city is using for affordable housing.
Annual or?
Annual. Okay. Well, I mean, it's, I believe it's annual. That's a good question, though.
It's in a fund.
Yeah, it's in a fund, and the critical thing is, one is, as I've said before, the problem with affordable housing in this city is driven partially by the regulatory overreach of this governor, with EV equipment being required on certain housing, with the gross receipts tax, with all of the expenses that we have imposed at the government level. And some of that includes zoning and parking space requirements and other aspects. But there are also issues with crime and the fact that the so-called war zone Central Avenue is singularly unattractive to a lot of housing and people living there. That is a problem. So if the mayor got serious about crime, he would open up new tracts of housing that more people would be willing to live in, including downtown where the Rio Grande Foundation's offices are. And if we had a cool, hip happening downtown for all the young people that would live there, it would be a different story.
The homelessness issue and encampments and Paul, I live in the Northeast Heights, and they're there.
Oh, absolutely. They're everywhere.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the closer you get to downtown, the more, but not only is the homelessness an issue, but the affordability. Yeah. I'm at a quandary how to solve a problem like this.
The homeless problem and the housing problem are two separate but interrelated issues. Yeah. And whether this $23 million is actually doing anything, I'm of the opinion that if you get government out of the way, and with the exception of course, addressing the crime issues, then you will solve most of the problem with housing. And we don't need this $23 million affordable housing fund. But I want to point something specific out about this. And that is, if you look at the story, you will see that city council questioned, we've got this $23 million fund, and they rightfully questioned spending $3.3 million to renovate a stairway at one apartment complex called Beach Apartments. You're like, where the heck is a beach in Albuquerque? I've lived here for all this time, and I didn't know there was a
surfing,
beach.
The surfing down at Tingley?
Tingley Beach, yes. the Beach Apartments, located at 2500, in the 2500 block of Tingley Drive Southwest,
there you go.
Were built in 84, required by the city in 91, contained 74 units, and they ultimately had to move 23 of those families out because they had to spend $3.3 million for a stairway.
So now we're at $19.7 million in the fund?
Well, I'm sure that they've got more money and less money, and that they've been spending. This is kind of one of those rolling projects. But when you spend that kind of money on an individual staircase at one apartment complex, imagine what you could do with all that other money. And of course, I'm of the opinion that government housing and housing programs are not the way to go about this, but to encourage people to get into some form of market-based housing and doing that by improving the affordability and the safety of those houses.
Sounds like we need a NM or ABQ Doge.
That would be great. We do have a feisty and aggressive Inspector General at the city of Albuquerque, and they have frequently taken the mayor to task for a lack of responsibility.
$3.3 million stairwells.
Yeah. So the problem is that city council sets aside these funds, and then it's up to the executive to spend the money. And I think, as part of our efforts to educate people in advance of the mayoral election this fall, there is a crowded field of folks for that mayoral race. We, of course, in addition to all of those candidates, have a runoff election, which, if you had one person running against Mayor Keller, or two, as we had last election,
or nine more.
Well, right? Last election we had two, two with Keller. Now I believe we have.
There's 11.
They're coming in and out, but we're going to go with 7, 8, 9. Yeah, we've got a lot of folks running for mayor. Some of them are not legitimate candidates. Some of them are. Some of them are more conservative oriented. Some of them are more left oriented, like the mayor. So it's going to be interesting. My suspicion is that the mayor will make his way through the initial vote, and then you will have one of the more conservative folks. Could be Eddie Varela, could be Darren White, could be Luis Sanchez. Somebody will bear the standard of moderation to run against the mayor.
I think I might speak for the residents that I'm ready for, you know, we were saying the Democratic leaning or Republican leaning, or I think I'm ready for an ABQ leading mayor.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, just to be clear, again, not a partisan issue. We had significant issues with R.J. Berry's leadership, specifically ART.
Agreed.
And that's, so we need somebody who's going to come in and actually clean up the city and really address crime and to make the city government work.
Someone who's in that office.
The bus system.
For the residents of Albuquerque.
The homeless problem. Yeah. All of that.
Which, by the way, November 5th is going to be the mayoral election. And correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, we were talking about this yesterday. You know, say if we are at 11, and like you said, many of those, maybe we're more at 8. If we go into it 8 or 6, whatever, November 5th, if someone does not get 50% of the votes, the top two vote getters will get a runoff election after that.
Yeah, and at this point right now, we're still in the process of winnowing the field because those folks are out right now looking for signatures to get ballot access and to get public financing. So if you're involved or want to see those people on the ballot, reach out to their campaigns and find out what you need to do.
Yeah, they're looking for signatures, and most of them like a $5 donation because they have a certain monetary level they need to get in order to qualify for a publicly funded campaign. And then there's some that are choosing the privately funded route to go. We talked about that a little bit yesterday on ABQ Connect, which, by the way, if you want to go back and listen to that, abqconnect.online, we spent the full hour with Carla Sontag from the New Mexico Business Coalition and Better Together New Mexico. Let's go ahead and press on at least one more of these blogs before we go to a break, Paul. Another blog at errorsofenchantment.com. The latest New Mexico oil production, which you touched on earlier in the broadcast, but the latest New Mexico oil production highlight, continued strong production.
Yes. Overall, since the boom kicked off in New Mexico's Permian Basin about 12 years ago, is when it really got rolling, and then it kicked into high gear, I think it's safe to say, about 5 or 6 years ago, when we've seen the money really flow into New Mexico. We've septupled seven times, is what that means, the amount of oil that is brought out of the ground in New Mexico. And we've seen, generally speaking, pretty favorable prices for the state of New Mexico. Now, a favorable price for the state of New Mexico does not mean a favorable price for you and I, because when we go to the pump, we want to see 0.1 cents and, you know, beyond. We want to see basically free oil for us driving our vehicles around. For the state, they want to see more a stable price, if not a higher price. And what spurred this particular post was that in recent days, recent weeks, the price of crude oil has dropped below the $60 a barrel threshold. Typically, the oil producers and the producing states, they rely on something on the order of $70. So we're kind of sliding downward. It's a combination of Trump's pro-energy policies, but Trump's trade policies. So pro-energy means supplies are coming online, which will lead to lower prices. Tariff policies leading to economic slowdown or possibly a recession would tamp down demand. So the point is that while we are benefiting as motorists from lower prices at the pump, and you can find definitely a decline in those prices in recent weeks, this will have some profound impacts on New Mexico budgetarily. Now, So far, production has remained very strong, but you know, it's the way the oil and gas industry works is that it's not that the price drops and then everything completely goes offline and you see a drop of production. It's that over time, if the prices remain at a low level, there's not going to be new production coming online, and that will reduce both production and the amounts of money flowing into the state of New Mexico's coffers. So New Mexico's state budget is still very, very robust, very, very strong, and they're flush with cash. They can do whatever they need to do, and then they've got $60 billion sitting in various funds that they could do even more with. But it is worth acknowledging and noting that this is a ever-moving situation. It's getting a little more dynamic and dicey in terms of prices and the way the economy is going.
All right, we're up against the break, and we're going to get to our final segment with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. The blogs that we're talking about for the most part today found at errorsofenchantment.com, and as we've mentioned throughout the show, Paul's Tipping Point podcast. You can find it, Tipping Point New Mexico, I should say, tippingpointnm.com. Paul, how often are those posted?
Tipping Point New Mexico, we record every Monday or Tuesday, and they're posted. So we do a conversation of much like this between my co-host Wally and I on Tuesday that is posted that day. And then the interviews are posted every Thursday, and we do them generally 51 weeks out of the year, with the only week off is between Christmas and New Year's. So we've got a good long string of shows coming, and we've obviously got over 700 episodes on tippingpointnm.com.
Yeah, but many of them, although it's once a week, like you said, you have twice a week. You can go, you know, a dozen or two back, and or maybe farther. A lot of those are still very relevant. So go
absolutely
go look at the list at tippingpointnm.com, or you know, look for it as you go get your wherever you get your podcast. All right, we're going to be back with more after this on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us. Our final segment of ABQ Connect today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And Paul, let's jump into another blog you posted at errorsofenchantment.com. And, you know, as long as you and I have been doing this, I can't think of a time where, the education in New Mexico, I should say the report card for how the students, how the education system in New Mexico is performing hasn't been at the bottom of the list. And so another day, another remedial plan for New Mexico education. That's not an encouraging headline.
Yeah. So 7 years ago, there was a lawsuit that was resolved, if you will, handed down by a New Mexico judge. Singleton was her name. And it found that the New Mexico education system was inadequate for Native and minority students. Now, I could not agree more with the judge's finding. We're perpetually at the very bottom in terms of our education outcomes in New Mexico. But the judge, who has since passed on, she simply required that the PED essentially spend more money. So there was obviously some accountability, some efforts to try to follow and track what PED, Public Education Department, was doing and move things in a positive direction. But no school choice, and I'm not sure a judge could even mandate that, but the point is that the judge mandated more money, which turned into $2 billion in additional education spending.
How's that working out?
And it's not working out. So no school choice, no accountability a la what happened in Mississippi. Instead, we've just got an education system that continues to bounce along as the very worst performing in the entire country.
And we touched on this a little bit yesterday in Louisiana, along with Mississippi and us, who always, Louisiana has shown some positive change.
They've all followed Florida model, which we've
neglected.
Talked about. Yeah. Well, the state has neglected.
Yeah.
Susana Martinez brought the Florida model to New Mexico via the Rio Grande Foundation. We really pushed that with her, and she embraced it and tried to get it through the legislature, but the legislature was unwilling to embrace it. Now that the results are in, there may be some more willingness to at least embrace aspects of the Mississippi-Florida model. And that model involves teaching teachers how to teach phonics-based learning, making sure they can read, the kids can read by fourth grade, yeah. and just really emphasizing the role of early childhood reading in phonics-based learning in education. It sounds very simple, but...
Since you brought up literacy... and I brought it up yesterday. I want to bring it up again today. I believe part of the problem here in New Mexico is adult literacy. If parents are sending their kids to school, and now, granted, most parents truly probably do send their kids off, and someone else is going to educate my kid. However, if parents at home, regardless of where your kids are, you spend time with them and you're helping them with their education, that's going to obviously, right, increase those scores, you would imagine. Mm-hmm. But I want to just mention readwest.org. It's actually up in Rio Rancho, an organization that assists with adult literacy. So if it's an issue in your home and you're frustrated because you can't maybe, or maybe someone you know, someone in your sphere of influence, readwest.org. They've got some great ways to assist in that area. And I apologize, I interrupted again.
That's okay. So we have a working model. We just need to act on it here in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Another judge has come along and said, PED, slap them on the wrist, and you guys need to do better. You need to focus on improving education outcomes for students. That's all well and good, but until the legislature and the governor actually decide to act, we're going to be stuck in this cycle. So choice and or accountability, yeah. both would be welcome.
I got more to say, but we have more to get to.
There is a proposed regulation being discussed right now by New Mexico's Environment Department and their Occupational Health and Safety Bureau. You can weigh in. This is the audience participation portion of our show. You can go to heirsofenchantment.com and look for a big heat advisory graphic there. And basically, they are looking for comments from folks who are concerned or one way or the other on this new regulation, which would impose a variety of new tracking and regulatory tools when the heat index meets or exceeds 80 degrees. Now, 80 degrees is a very, very
and that's
moderate
the index.
Number.
Exactly. It's not even the actual temperature outside.
Now, in New Mexico, the heat index does tend to track the temperature quite directly because we don't have the humidity that drives up the heat index that you get back east. But we're talking about possibly chefs and restaurants and other facilities that maybe construction workers or people doing office furniture installations in buildings that don't have HVAC systems working yet. Anyway, it is just the inability and the expense of complying with all of the regulatory aspects of this proposal, and in questioning whether this is really the way it all should be done. Now, there are federal regulations and whatnot on heat. But ultimately, this is going to be, if adopted, much, much more onerous than the federal rules. So I encourage folks to check out that post. It's got the links and all the information if you want to send them a brief note. You don't have to be a business owner or a scientist or anything. You can just go in and comment and say, I think this is a bad idea. It's going to raise costs
right.
and be expensive.
Heirsofenchantment.com to find that. Paul, we got about 30 seconds. The latest on EV sales and mandates in New Mexico.
There's a lot happening. Congress, the House, just voted to repeal California's waiver on EV mandates. And, of course, New Mexico operates under California's waiver. Gabe Vasquez even joined the people on the Congress that are voting against to undermine the waiver. So kudos to Representative Vasquez. Of course, he is CD2, I believe. The other two representatives voted to continue the California waiver. But this is the way that we as a nation need to address the EV mandates. The legislature in New Mexico refused to overturn our EV mandates that was imposed undemocratically by the governor through a bureaucratic process, not the legislature. And if the Senate will join the House, then we can actually get back to a place where we have a automobile market that is under the federal aegis of the EPA and whatnot, not something that's manipulated by one state or a group of states.
Paul, as always, thank you and the team at Rio Grande Foundation for your hard work. I'm going to give those sites again real quick. RioGrandeFoundation.org, heirsofenchantment.com, and tippingpointnm.com. Paul, let's do it again next month.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, and thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.